MediTalk with Dr. Ross Walker.
Okay, let me see. Dr. Ross Walker joins us this afternoon. Hello, Ross.
G'day, mate. Lovely to talk to you.
How are you?
No, I'm very well, thank you.
Fit as a mallee bull, as the saying goes, eh?
No, I wouldn't say mallee bull. No, I did have an MRI of my back on Saturday, and it looks like I'm going to have an injection into my spine sometime tomorrow.
Ooh.
Bit of back pain, but that's all right. You know what it's like, my friend.
Yes.
Things fall apart as you get older.
They do, unfortunately. Yeah, some of us quicker than others. And then some of us just collapse in a bloody heap.
Yep.
Okay, I've got a couple of questions for you. Look, this is a serious question. Michael says, asked this before, missed the answer. I've not asked you this before. He said it's a genuine question. Can a woman take Cialis? He said it's a genuine question. If not, why not? Wouldn't it have the same effect on blood flow to the area as it does in a male? Also, is it unsafe for anyone in particular to take, meaning is there any existing conditions that mean it should be avoided? Thank you.
Yeah, look, it's a great question, and the answer to this question, I know this is daytime radio, so I'll try and keep it as subtle as I can, but the female response is totally different to the male response. And so, therefore, the way these drugs work is by increasing the blood flow to the male organ, which gives you a strong erection, whereas in females, the increasing blood flow to their organs doesn't make them more aroused and doesn't improve the sexual response. So it's a completely different thing. It doesn't increase your libido at all, which is your drive. All it does is improve your performance.
Right.
If you need your performance improved. So no, it doesn't actually help that. It's been trialed. It hasn't improved anything for females. But there is a but here. A study that was published about close to a year ago now of 72,000 men over the age of 50 with a degree of erectile dysfunction showed that men who were the highest end users of Cialis and Viagra had a 50% reduction in all-cause death and a 55% reduction in cardiac events. Other studies have suggested a 50% reduction in bowel cancer and a 70% reduction in dementia. Now, this has not been proven in a randomized controlled clinical trial, which I've got to say will never be done because the drugs are now off patent. But it is suggesting that there are extra benefits from being on these drugs, and the studies have never been done in women, whether they get the extra benefits at all, because how these drugs work is they're vasodilators, so they open up the arteries to all arteries in the body and flush out the crap, so to speak. So it gives you better blood flow to all your organs, to your brain, to your heart, to your gut, and that's probably why we're seeing these benefits from these drugs. But the studies just haven't been done in women because there was no reason to give them to women for those things. Now, are there any problems with these drugs? Well, when Viagra was first released in the market over 25 years ago, there were a few deaths from people taking the Viagra, but the reason for that was that Viagra allowed them to do an activity they couldn't have done up to that point for other reasons, and it was the activity, not the Viagra, that caused the problem. So often men will say, oh, I'll take a Viagra because it'll improve my performance, but they've got such serious heart disease that the performance is actually causing them a major issue with their heart. And the other problem is that if you're on cardiac drugs such as nitrates, so nitroglycerin under the tongue, or you take a thing called Imdur, there's a bad interaction between these drugs that can drop your blood pressure to your boots.
Obviously, if you're considering taking this, you've got to get a prescription for it, so you have to have a serious conversation with your GP about it before you contemplate taking
this. Unfortunately, mate, a number of general practitioners think there's a problem with it. There are no problems with it if your heart's fine, but if you've got cardiac disease, and I mean, I often do a pre-Viagra stress test on patients to make sure they can do the activity.
Right.
It's not the drug that I'm worried about, because the drug is a coronary vasodilator, as it's a vasodilator of other arteries. But you just got to make sure that they're healthy enough to resume sexual activity, so to speak.
Okay, Thomas says, I suffer from heartburn and stomach issues. and recently purchased a probiotic called P3 with, I think it's, he says here, Manuka honey.
It's Manuka honey.
Yeah, I thought it was. Manuka honey, not Manuka honey, Manuka honey. They claim it had a better than 80% success rate with IBS, reflux, and bloating. Is this something that Dr. Ross has heard of?
I haven't heard of the particular probiotic. And when people say that they've got an 80% success rate, I'd be a bit suspicious of that. I'd like to see the evidence for that. Often, you know, 8 people out of 10 have taken have said, I had a good response, and they just didn't bother to publish the other 20 people. So I'm not sure that there is any good science behind this, but please, if there is, and the company who makes it, send the science to me. I'm happy to read it, and I'm happy to talk about it. I can't specifically endorse any product on radio. It's a rule of the TGA that doctors are not allowed to mention products on radio anymore, so I can't talk about any of the stuff that I've done research on in the past. You can mention it, but I can't. So look, I've not heard that this particular type of probiotic with Manuka honey does this for reflux, but it may. There is a natural product called Iberogar, so I'm not mentioning the trade name, I just the general product is called Iberogar, which has got 8 different herbs in it, which has been shown to improve reflux a little bit. Nothing so strong as the PPIs, such as Nexium, Pariet, and Somac, but the PPIs also have significant long-term side effects, so I don't like anyone taking those every day on a regular basis unless it's vitally necessary.
Back to our question on Viagra.
Yeah.
You'd appreciate this, I think.
Yeah.
Howard tells me, newsflash, a truckload of Viagra has just been stolen from Lambton.
Yeah.
Police are looking for 4 hardened criminals. There you go.
Yeah, an oldie but a goodie, yeah. I think, unfortunately, I've heard them all. I could tell you some other ones, but I
yeah,
probably
better
won't.
Not. No. It is, as you said, a morning show, afternoon show. Rob says, hi, Brent, any chance you could ask Dr. Walker about lung, is it denervation for COPD and when it would be available in Australia?
Yeah, look, there's been a lot of different things tested for COPD. Lung denervation is one of them. I'm not sure the evidence is that great, but I haven't read any papers on this. But what I have heard about it, it's okay. There's a fellow at Macquarie Private Hospital in Sydney called Professor Alvin Ng, and he's done some extraordinary stuff with putting weird sort of catheters, one-way catheters in the lungs of people with COPD with marked improvement as well. So there's a lot of different techniques that are being used, because at the moment the management of COPD is not that great, and it's just bronchodilators, so inhaling this stuff, the steroids and other things to open up your lungs. But I've not heard a lot about the lung denervation, and what I have heard, it's okay, but it's nothing miracle, and I certainly don't know if it's available in Australia at the moment.
Thank you, Dr. Ross. Let's get to some of the topics. A new study has found patients using long-term treatments, this is for ADHD medications, are slightly more likely to develop hypertension or, is it AF? No, it's arterial disease.
Arterial
disease. Yep. But experts say the risk is worth the reward on this ADHD medication.
Yeah. Well, look, it's said that 1 in 20 Australians suffer ADHD, so which is attention deficit and hyperactivity disorder. And it can really make people's lives a misery, and the parents of children have this a misery, and a lot of adults are now being diagnosed with this as well. So this was a 14-year international study of people aged between 6 to 64 diagnosed with ADHD, and it found that there was about a 4% increased risk for cardiovascular disease, especially blood pressure and atherosclerotic heart disease, especially in the first few years and especially in those people who are taking the biggest doses. But it's only a small increase. And what we're talking about is probably 7 cases per 1,000 years studied or 1,000 years treated with the disease. So it's not that high, but it's certainly there. And really, the vital point from this study is that if you have a high risk factor profile for heart disease, or, for example, you might be a 6 or 7-year-old or 10-year-old with a history of congenital heart disease, you've got to really, the parents really have to have a strong conversation with the doctor as to whether drugs like Ritalin and the amphetamines are necessary in this situation.
Okay. Now, look, this is under the heading Myth, and it says red meat and dairy are bad for your health. This is a University of Chicago study, and TVA, which is, you tell me what TVA stands for?
TVA is transvaccinic acid. So for the anti-vaxxers out there, this has got nothing to do with vaccines. It's just a long-chain fatty acid that's in meat and dairy products. And so what it's been shown to do, this TVA, is improve particular white cells called T cells that are vitally important in combating cancer and viruses. So what they're saying is that this stuff is very heavily present in red meat and in dairy. So we've heard for years, mate, how many conservative organisations have come out and said saturated fat is bad for your health? And I've been saying, I wrote about this in a book over 20 years ago, that there is no link between saturated fat and heart disease. And a recent study called the PURE study, 220,000 people followed in 50 different countries for 9 years, showed that, for example, if you have on average 100 grams of red meat per day and 3 servings of high fat dairy per day, this leads to a 25% reduction in death and cardiovascular disease. So we've got some evidence to suggest there's something in red meat and dairy that can reduce your risk for cancer, and also good evidence that it doesn't cause more heart disease or death.
So that's 700 grams of beef, which is a decent size serving of beef. So
no,
if you were to
100 grams, so
yes,
700 grams
but
over a week.
That's per day, so that's in total over a week, that's 700 grams.
Yep.
So if you were to have a couple of 300 gram steaks a week, that's not going to be detrimental to your health.
Well, that's what these studies are suggesting. So, you see, I think it's actually who the red meat and who the dairy's hanging around with. So a lot of people get their red meat in takeaway hamburgers or in processed foods, and there is evidence that that causes issues. So, for example, one study that came out a few years ago, if you have processed meat every day, whether that's ham, bacon, Devon, or things like that every day, there's a 40% increased risk for heart disease. Now, that doesn't mean 40% of people who take the stuff will have heart disease. It means if your predicted risk is 10%, a 40% increase takes you from 10% to 14%. So it's not a huge increase. So, for example, if you had bacon every day, that increases your risk for bowel cancer by 17%. Now, the real numbers are that 6 people per 100 per lifetime will develop bowel cancer. By having the bacon every day takes you up to 7 people per 100 per lifetime. So it's not a huge increase.
How to get a better night's sleep, they say, by hacking your brain waves. Gee whiz, we'd all love a better night's sleep than the quality of sleep that we get. I don't know many people that really that I talk to, or my friends that I associate with, that do get a regular good night's sleep.
No, look, and I'm one of those who doesn't as well. And I've got to say that 30% of adults suffer some degree of insomnia, and probably 10% severe insomnia, where they're waking up. I find it, A, difficult to get off to sleep, B, waking up at, say, 2 in the morning, staring at the ceiling for an hour or so, which may be a symptom of depression, by the way. That's a major symptom of depression. But what this is talking about is we all know that there are so many things now that can monitor your sleep. That's one thing, but they're talking about now new devices like earphones that you can wear that not only track your sleep, but when you start to come out of a deep sleep, they put this stuff in called pink noise, which is a variant of white noise, and it can push your brain back into a deep sleep. So what we're talking about now is not only monitoring the sleep better, but actually being able to intervene and make you sleep better with these new devices that will be coming onto the market over the next few years. Not available yet, but won't be too long. So I just thought it was really interesting.
Yeah, well, I suppose, you know, we all know. We've been talking about this now, for quite a few years about how important sleep is. But you rewind the tape for 20 years ago and it was never discussed, having good quality sleep.
No, but a lot of things weren't discussed. I mean, you think about when you and I were kids, doctors used to advise people to smoke for stress relief.
True, yes.
You know, and so things have changed markedly. And I think sleep's one of them. I mean, we really have, over the last, especially, I've been doing this especially over the last 20 years, the vital importance of exercise. But even talking about the vital importance for your health of having good relationships with people. And we hadn't really focused on that until the last couple of decades. So I think we're realizing that the five keys of being healthy, no addictions, good sleep, good eating and less of it, 3 to 5 hours of exercise and happiness, much more important than anything a damn doctor can do for you.
Talk about this experimental drug that a single dose will lower your blood pressure for 6 months.
Yeah, this is interesting because, you see, the problem is that of people with high blood pressure, and that's many of us, many people have high blood pressure. I'm certainly one of them, as I'm on pills for it. 70% of people aren't taking their pills or taking the pills at the prescribed level. People are just not good with taking medications. I'm an anally retentive neurotic, so I'm very good at doing it. But this particular new treatment is a thing called xyloberacin, and it's an injection every 6 months, which works on a thing called angiotensinogen, which is a vital part of the hypertension pathways. They trialled 400 people with this stuff, an injection every 6 months, lowered their blood pressure on average about 20 millimetres of mercury, which is better than swallowing a pill. So for those people who aren't compliant with medications, you just turn up and have a shot every 6 months, and it lowers your blood pressure. So if anyone's listening, please don't rush off to your GP and ask for it tomorrow, because it's not available yet. But this is a trial that's just come out, published, or presented recently at the American Heart Association meeting, which showed a significant benefit. So this is the way of the future, mate, that for a lot of people that aren't taking their pills, you just have a shot every 6 to 12 months and Bob's your uncle, so to speak.
Well, you're like me, we'll take, you know, God, heaps and heaps of supplements, etc., each and every morning. I often think, if only I could get all of this in one or two tablets, wouldn't it be wonderful?
Yeah. Well, that's right. So imagine just a shot every 6 months.
Yeah.
You forget about it the rest of the time.
Absolutely. Yeah. I got to love you and leave you, as always. Okay, thank you. Thank you so much, as always. We always love having a chat with you. And next week, you're up for it next week?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, after that, we break from next Friday week. So next week will be our last chat for 2023.
Okay, well, I look forward to it, mate.
All right, mate. Thanks, Ross. See you, mate. Okay. Bye-bye.